Do you know what a very wise man once said?
What?
He said, sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never hurt me.
That's because nobody ever called him Shorty. Why do I have to be short? Why can't I be big and tall like my hero?
Eddie, I don't know who this hero is that you're talking about, but take it from me. He's probably not worth looking up to at all. Lots of so-called heroes are just conceited, vain, good-for-nothings, as a rule.
But, Dad, the hero I'm talking about is you.
Oh. Well, Eddie, there are exceptions to every rule, aren't there?
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. So from 1964 to 66, the Munsters hit the airwaves on 1313 Mockingbird Lane with two seasons and 70 original episodes on ABC. Fred Gwynne, Yvonne DiCarlo, Al Lewis, Beverly Owen, and Pat Priest, respectively, and the youngest member of the cast, Butch Patrick, have been entertaining fans of this classic sitcom for over 50 years. Well, this month, Butch Patrick will be right here in Chicago at Santa's Village Amusement Park in East Dundee every weekend in October at their Fables Fright Night. He has a coffin table book out, love that, called Monster Memories, and is ready to launch a new series called Property Horrors. And tonight, Butch Patrick joins us in studio. Nice to see you again, Butch.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to Chicago. You got to get a little Chicago traffic in your blood today.
Yeah, you know, it's L.A., Chicago, all I need is New York now.
That's right. Well, you know, everyone knows you as Eddie Munster, but that's not where you got your start.
No, actually, it was an interesting situation. They were an agent was looking at my little sister, and I went along for the ride for a photo shoot. The gentleman had some couple shots left over in his camera, and he thought I was kind of cute and had a look about me, so he took a few photos. One of those pictures he put in his window on Hollywood Boulevard at his studio. And a director and a producer were walking by that were casting a little B-movie called The Two Little Bears, mm-hmm. noticed the picture, tracked me down through that photo.
Eddie Albert, Jane Wyatt,
Eddie
right?
Albert, Jane yeah. Wyatt, Soupy Sales, Nancy Culp, and a 15-year-old wow. singing sensation, Brenda Lee.
Look at that.
So it was a great little B-movie, 6 weeks of work, and that was actually the first interview I ever went on. But before that went into production, I went on another interview for a little series that was a soap opera that was called General Hospital. So I was on the first year of General Hospital. Did the Real McCoys after that. Then from there, the Munsters came along.
Very cool. And you did some guest roles, too, like on Bonanza and Rawhide and My Favorite Martian in between all this as well.
Yeah, I was always very busy doing guest starring roles. And back then, they had a lot of old shows. And there was Alcoa Theaters and a lot of shows that aren't on today. But, I kept very busy
they
before the Munsters.
They kept you very busy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, at such a young age, was acting something you just wanted to do? Were your parents encouraging once you got rolling?
It wasn't really something I didn't dislike it. I didn't like it. I really had no opinion on it. It came easy. And I knew I was doing something special, and I thought it was fun. And I knew I enjoyed it more than going back to boring old elementary school. So with that in with that in mind, I thought this isn't so bad. And I kept so darn busy that it was fun. And like I said, it came reasonably easy to me. And the rest was just somewhat history.
Well, this is pretty cool because Universal Studios, of course, was best known from the 30s through the 50s as the home to the Universal Monsters, Frankenstein, Dracula, the Werewolf, among others. And the idea of a family about comical monsters was first suggested to Universal in the 40s, I think, by Bob Clampett, who was an animator for Looney Tunes.
That's correct, yes.
And it was nixed. Rocky and Bullwinkle writers Alan Burns, Chris Hayward also pitched a series. But it was a script by Norm Lemon and Ed Haas mm-hmm. called Love Thy Monster. And these were Leave It to Beaver guys?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Joe Colley and Bob Mosier, who created Leave It to Beaver, and also Amos and Andy before Leave It to Beaver. It's funny when you mentioned the cartoon guys, because some of the most talented and funny people in Hollywood in the 30s, 40s, and 50s were cartoonists and animators. And they would get away with things through cartoons.
Yeah.
And to this day, they all have these little secret eggs in a lot of these movies and stuff that these guys, because I did the Phantom Tollbooth for Chuck Jones when I was 14, and wow. I learned a lot from him, and my grandfather was actually an animator for Disney. But those guys back in the day, a lot of them were behind the scenes in animation, and then they transferred over into sitcoms.
You know, you think about those creative minds. Obviously, when you're doing animation, you know, that takes a ton of creativity. So, you know, coming up with something like this mm-hmm. seems like a natural.
Oh, absolutely. And it's there's such a talented pool. There's the people that do the voices, the Mel Blancs, the June Forays, Dawes Butler, all those people. And it's kind of like a subculture of comedy that was its own little clique. You know, these guys were like, you know, basically they were very, way ahead of their time.
Sure. Now, there was a pilot that was done. It was done in color, which is it's still bizarre to watch that because it's a slightly different cast. And Fred Gwynne as Herman looks a little different with the makeup and everything. That didn't quite click, and I know there was like 500 kids that, and you think about this, 500 people auditioning for the role as Eddie Munster in the Munsters, right?
Yeah, and at that time, I wasn't even living in L.A. I had gone back to live with my grandmother. I was in the fifth grade. To be perfectly honest with you, Bill Mumy was their first choice, and he didn't want to do it. His mother didn't want him in makeup.
Yeah.
Plus, he was working a lot. I think a series would have probably, you know, held him back because I worked a lot, but this guy was over the top busy. Then what they did is they had a kid named Happy Derman and Joan Marshall playing the mom as the Phoebe role. And he played Eddie Munster as a very rabid, angry, aggressive little kind of guy, scratchy, itchy guy.
Not a happy-feely kind of guy.
Not a happy guy for Happy Derman. And so what happened, apparently at the last minute, they brought in some star power, which was Yvonne DiCarlo.
Of course.
And they decided,
big movie actress.
And they decided to go with a more likable kid, more like a Beaver, more like a Leave It to Beaver type character.
Yeah.
And my agent sold them on me. So they said, we've looked at every kid in Hollywood. She goes, true, but he's not in Hollywood. He's in Illinois. I was down the street in a little town called Geneseo, not too far from here. And they flew me out, and we went over to the studio, and that was the rest was history.
And, of course, Fred, Gwynne, and Al Lewis, they were in Car 54, Where
Correct.
Are You? So they had some good chemistry already going.
They were a very good comic team.
They were really something. And I think about this all the time. Butch, that the show, and I know, you know, today, you know, they're doing 18 episodes, 13 episodes, 22. You guys did like 30, 35 plus. And this show was only on for 2 years. And you think about the chemistry that the cast had. Mm-hmm. It's still one of the funniest shows that still stands up today.
It really does. A lot of people. And it's when you watch it, it's, you know, the obvious is the interaction with the actors and the writing. But when you go past it and you listen to the music and you listen to the editing and the sound and the Foley, and then you listen to and look and then visually you look at the lighting and the editing and the sound and the set design. I mean, just the special effects and the sets. It was done very much like a little mini movie. The lighting, the film factor and all that stuff and all the above, it made it look like a little quality movie.
But this was, I was going to say, Universal obviously produced the Munsters as well, but they were able to use these copyrighted designs of Frankenstein. You know, that wasn't just something you could go out and do.
No.
I mean, Universal owned that right to do a lot of that stuff. And the makeup of the show was created and applied to the actors by makeup genius Bud Westmore, which is pretty cool. And the house. I mean, just so much of everything on here, a lot of the elements of the house and Grandpa's dungeon was there's parts and pieces I think from Frankenstein the original movie in there, right?
Yeah, a couple of things that a lot of people don't know is I always just call them Chuck and Dave were the special effects guys, and we were doing old school special effects. We, you know, wires, smoke machines, smoke pots, stuff that, you know, by today would be like archaic stuff, but it was very cutting edge at the time.
Absolutely.
And each one of them individually went off to one went to Lucas and one went with Spielberg, so they both headed up these incredible sets and stuff. So we know we had this raw talent that was doing really great things. The music, Jack Marshall won an Emmy, which I wasn't aware of. You know, won a Grammy for the sound.
Wow.
We had the best guest stars lined up to come and do the comedy routines. We had Paul Lynde as Dr. Dudley, hilarious. Harvey Korman, pre-Carol Burnett show. Don Rickles, Frank Gorshin.
Rickles was on everything in the 60s,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, literally, I mean, it was interesting to see all these great. Dom DeLuise did his first TV role when he replaced Paul Lynde as Dr. Dudley.
That was
so we had a lot going on there. Not to mention the cars. We had the cars. We had the special effects. Like you mentioned, the Westmores owned Hollywood. Each studio had a Westmore as head. You know, you had Wally, Frank, Monty, Bud, Purse. And then at Universal, we had Purse, Bud, and Michael Westmore was my makeup man, who his daughter now hosts Face Off.
Okay. All right.
Mackenzie.
Okay. Now, the house was built in 1946 for a movie called So Goes My Love. And then it's funny to hear they put it into storage.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometime in the 50s, they assembled it, you know, with other homes on the back lot. And until the production of the Munsters, the house could be seen on other shows, and I think it still can be seen on other shows. Like there's like Desperate Housewives in the 2000s. You could see these things in the background, which is crazy. But you know, it's iconic. just looking at that house, you know where to cut, where it comes from.
Oh, yeah. And you look across the street, and there's Marcus Welby's house. And you look two doors down, there's the Beaver House. Over here, you have one of the, I think it was the Big Valley Western House. But, yeah, Colonial Street was really a cool. And that was one of the things in my book. You mentioned Munster Memories. At the end of the book, even though I put it together, the editor said, well, what about your memory? And I said, well, my memory really wasn't from the Munsters. It was from when I wasn't working, going around Universal as my own private little, you know, let's go find out what's going on today and who's on the who's new on the lot.
Yeah. How cool is that for a little kid exploring Hollywood like that? Yeah. Tell me about working with Fred Gwynn. I mean, you know, just an amazing actor.
Fred and Al, and I'll go with Fred first. Fred taught me a lot, and a lot of times I think one of the reasons that the Eddie character emerged as good as he did, and they wrote as many scripts for him, was because of the father and son shows that evolved with Fred and I, because it was a very funny combination. He was very tall, I was very short, and it became the student and the teacher and the reversal to where I became the adult, he became the childlike, tall,
very
lovable giant. So I have to thank Fred for working with me on that, because of the fact that we could do these scenes together, a lot of scripts were written featuring Eddie. Now, Grandpa, on the other hand, and Herman taught me a lot about acting. This is the moments that we had were very important to me for acting techniques. Now, Al, on the other hand, he was all about don't take it too seriously, all about sports. A mentor, yes, but at the same time, he knew the importance of letting a little kid be a little kid and going outside and tossing a baseball or tossing a frisbee with you. And at the same time, you know, he would bark at you if you did something wrong. I mean, he was kind of like your watchdog in a you know, tough love way.
Yeah, okay. A grandfatherly sort of way,
And Fred was working so much that he never really had any spare time whatsoever. So the moments I had for Fred were basically in front of the camera during rehearsals, where Al, I spent a lot of time behind the scenes.
How about Yvonne?
Yvonne was great. She was actually, she was a very strong woman. I mean, she was a major movie star. She had, you know, literally been dating Howard Hughes and Prince Farouk and Ali Khan and Shah of Iran. I mean,
so beautiful, so exotic looking
gorgeous,
she was. Oh, yeah.
But she was, by today's standards, she would be considered a strong broad. I mean, she was a tough chick.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
She was a tough chick, but the thing was, is she held her own on that show, and she was a very strong maternal, held everything together, and it was a tough role for her because back then movie stars weren't doing television. She stepped down into TV and made it her own and made it work and held her own against two bona fide, you know, New York TV actors who tortured her.
Yeah, I bet they did.
Who really took great joy in tormenting this poor woman for a while.
And then
they respected her after they found out that she wasn't going anywhere and she was actually an asset, because they didn't think she could do comedy. And she did very well.
Oh, her looks, oh my gosh, it was fantastic.
And once she established herself, everything was great.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about the cars on the set and exploring a lot of that. Now, George Barris, the late legendary George Barris, who is best known for, of course, the Batmobile as well. He built two automobiles on the show. It was the Munster's coach, I think Grandpa's.
And the Dragula.
Which you have a couple of tribute cars,
yes,
don't
I do.
You? Yeah, yeah. But those are as iconic as the show and the house itself still to this day.
And when you go back to think about it, there were so many things happening on that show, and it was a one-of-a-kind show. I mean, literally, you know, there were a lot of Westerns, there were a lot of comedies, there were a lot of sitcoms, but there was only one show that featured people in full monster makeup.
Mm-hmm.
The Addams Family, they were not in makeup. You know, and I tell people, you know, the easiest way if you get mixed up is the Munsters were people that looked like monsters, and the Addams Family were monsters that looked like people, because they were very dark and they were very edgy. But the Munsters was a one-of-a-kind show, brief run, two years, but for some reason it has hit a nerve in Americana and American culture, and I think a lot of it has to do with it's just so much fun to watch, and it's so wholesome and family friendly, and you get really good feelings when you watch it. It's a warm, fuzzy feeling.
And you can still catch it on demand. Mm-hmm. It's on Cozy TV, I think.
It's on Netflix.
And Netflix, of course, as well. And then there was a movie. But the movie Munster Go Home, it was filmed in color. Was the series canceled by then? Or how did the order of that go?
It was, the movie came after the series was done. And I didn't even know this until recently, but one of the big shots in Hollywood, who's a big Munsters fan, explained to me that they wanted to syndicate the Munsters, but since the Munsters had never been seen anywhere in the world other than the States, they made the movie to release globally, and then people would then know there's also a series that is a follow-up to this movie.
Interesting.
And that was done as a marketing ploy.
To attract it, because this was in theaters. I mean, this was this was a theatrical release. And you think about it, when we only had a handful of channels, so many generations, you know, they got to know these TV shows, the 50s, 60s, 70s, and maybe the early 80s, where 35, 40, 50 million people were watching the same show. So different today. Because that's why these shows, I think, like the Munsters and your show here, that are so memorable to a certain generation because we all watched it.
Well, it's interesting when I get people coming up, and when they meet, if people ask me sometimes, don't you ever get tired of meeting and greeting people? And it's like, no, I really don't. And if I'm ever, you know, in a mood or something, and I get up and take a break for 5 minutes like anybody would, but
yeah,
it's very difficult not to be happy and friendly when these people come to the table and they come up to meet you and they share a very intimate, fond likeness, memory, love affair, or whatever. But you were part of their life. You didn't notice, but you were part of their life, very serious part. And when you can share and put a smile on someone's face for engaging them for a few moments and posing for a photo, and they go home with something, you know, something, some form of merchandise that they're going to treasure, that's a gift.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we talked years ago, but it was on the phone, and I walked out of the Tribune Tower to make sure you found the place. I knew exactly what you look like. Even though it was 50 years ago, you're still very recognizable, of course. I found this list of facts you might not know about the Munsters, and I want to talk about it with you because I'm not going to believe them until you tell me they're true or false to the best of your knowledge.
Okay.
Bert Lahr, who played the Cowardly Lion in Wizard of Oz, was offered the role of Grandpa.
I heard that. I don't know that to be accurate or not. It wouldn't surprise me.
John Carradine, a horror and Western actor, was offered the role of Herman.
Probably so, but at the same time, that's why they used him so much as Mr. Gateman and as Herman's boss. And I think that Fred would have been a better choice. But yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Grandpa was Lily's father, but Al Lewis was a year younger than Yvonne DiCarlo.
Yeah, but he looked really old.
He did.
One of my favorite lines with Al was that they turned him down for a role where he played, you know, Grandpa. They said the reason was he was too old. Yeah. And he was like, I play a 167-year-old vampire. How can I be too old?
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you talked about some of the voiceovers. The Cuckoo Clock, the voice was Mel Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Blanc. I know Herman's costume was brutally hot, and they worked very hard to keep him cool, but from sweating inside.
He had an air hose at his disposal that he would put underneath, and then he had a lot of lemonade and salt tablets on top of the coffee cart.
Yeah. Like many other series of the time, the cast starred in their sponsors' commercials. You guys were all in commercials. And here's one that you narrated for Cheerios.
This is my father. He hangs pictures. Helps Grandpa experiment. Helps Mommy with the cleaning. Where does he get his go? From me. I lend him my Cheerios. Daddy says they're the greatest thing since bat wings. Mommy says they give him protein and stuff. Give your father some go. And he might play catch with you.
Big G, little O. Go with Cheerios.
So after the Munsters, though, you made rounds on so many other TV series. You were on I Dream of Jeannie and Gunsmoke, The Monkees. I remember you on The Monkees, am I right?
Yeah, I did the Monkees Christmas episode. It was a very big time for me. I missed meeting the Beatles when the Beatles came to the Universal set.
That's crazy.
The studio, and they came on the Munsters set. And I wasn't there for whatever reason, but when The Monkees came around and I got a chance to beat out a bunch of kids for that episode, I was really jazzed. Because, you know, 14-year-old kid, that was a big week to be hanging around with The Monkees.
I bet.
And
I
if you
bet.
Ever see the Christmas episode, it's not because I'm in it, but I really believe it's the best episode they ever did. They sing a cappella, and then at the end, they break down the fourth wall, and they invite all the people that make the show.
Cool.
They bring everybody out to put them on camera to let everybody share the Christmas wishes with them.
Yeah,
and
check
that
out.
Really cool.
That sounds very cool. Yeah. You did Disney films, Way Down Cellar, The One and Only, The Young Loner, and then in 71, Sid Marty Krofft, who did all these amazing shows, and you worked with like Charles Nelson Reilly, Billy Hayes. How cool was that?
It was actually a show that I really didn't want to do it. I went up for the interview. I thought it was like silly Saturday morning.
Lidsville, yeah.
But the girl from the Bugaloos, I saw a picture of her, and I thought, well, maybe she might be hanging around. This might not be such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Took the role, Charles Nelson Reilly. I didn't know who he was at the time. We became great friends. Billy Hayes, I did know who she was.
Yeah.
But not from Puff and Stuff, but from Mammy Yoakum.
Little
Abner.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another. Sid convinced me to do it, and I thought these were cool guys. And it was only one summer. And I knew all the little people, because when you're growing up in Hollywood, when you're stand-ins, when you're a child, they use little people as a stand-in. So I knew all the people in the hats. These were all
friends
of mine. So I thought, this will be fun. I'll hang around with all my little friends, no pun intended, little people that I knew. And we spent the summer, and it turned out to be a really good move because it was a great show.
It was, absolutely. And you've always kept your hand in other roles and cameos, and you did The Simpsons and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you spent years in the music industry. I mean, you know, when you grew up, you did some pretty cool stuff.
They after I did Lidsville, an agent that was handling Sugarloaf, the managers of Sugarloaf mm-hmm. for Clearidge Music, wanted to make another David Cassidy-type role, and they knew that Bobby Sherman had been let go by Metro Media. So they figured they were going to fill that role with somebody, and they were looking, and my mom was working for the agency, and she suggested me. And we met, and I told them I don't sing. It's not my forte. They go, it doesn't matter. We'll fix it, you know. So I was actually doing Milli Vanilli work. 20 years before him.
But that happened a lot back then because it was about star power and building these groups and bands that that made it big, of course. Tell me about the book you released last fall.
Yeah. Well, it's
the Coffin Table book, which I think is hysterical.
What happened was I decided that all these people that, like I said, would came to the table and shared their experiences with me. There were just these great memories. And then all these people that had these super collections. So I know the super collectors. I knew the people that had given me these great stories about what the Munsters meant to them. And then I thought, well, I'll track down a few of the people that were involved with the show, like George Barris and Mike Westmore, and a few other people that were guest stars on the role in the show. And I put them all together into this book that's a tribute to the show itself, but mainly to the fan base. And that's why I call it Munster Memories. And it's just a combination of those three things, of personal memories from fans, people that were involved in the show and their memories, and then the people that have collections extraordinaire.
And where can they find it? I know Amazon's one of them, but you have a website as well.
Munsters.com.
There you go. Nice and
sweet,
simple.
Simple and sweet.
Yep. And you're going to be at East Dundee at Santa's Village Azusman Park on the weekends through October, which is very, very cool. It's called Fables Fright Night, which of course is a haunted house, haunted experience when you walk through the park, and you get to meet Butch Patrick as well.
Well, you know, when I went out, I actually came up and saw the property. I didn't know what I was getting into, and I was going to check it out. So when Peter at Fables contacted me, I went up there, and I was very impressed. It's a very family-oriented park.
Very much so.
It's been around forever. A gentleman that is into animals and zoos.
Jason Serpian.
Who'd purchased it, and he cleaned the place up and brought his animals into the park for a place for them to hang out. So now it's kind of a combination, little mini Disneyland. It's a theme park, but for the month of October, it'll be a haunted event. So I thought this will fit in really nice. It's kind of a retro-ween situation. It's
very
a throwback to another time, and I'm really excited to be associated with it.
Love taking my kids there because we grew up, and I'm sure you did too, with Disney probably because where you were. But we had Kiddyland, we had Santa's Village, and that's where we went as kids, and that's where we grew up. And it's so nice to still have something like that to pass on to another generation.
Well, the people that have come out that we've been speaking with, they all say, oh, yeah, I came here as a kid. My grandfather brought me here.
Yeah.
So I know that there's a really good following, and everybody knows the location. So I'm hoping that this first weekend it was raining and stuff, and it was like terrible weather. But I know once we get rolling.
That's perfect for a haunted experience, if you ask me.
Well, I couldn't put my car out.
This weekend. Ooh, you get to see those too.
I have my cars on display.
Ooh, very cool.
Yeah. And we're going to have some car shows in the parking lot, so a Hearst show, Hearst Club, and this and that. So we're going to have a really good time.
And that's fablesfrightnights.com, where you can go to Santa's Village Azusman Park and check that out as well. And congratulations, you got married.
Got married, yeah.
Look at you.
63 years old and bought a house, bought cars, got married. What's going on with it?
What is happening?
I've become a regular guy.
That's fantastic. You know, congratulations.
Thank you.
Your wife is just lovely, so congratulations. And again, catch Butch Patrick. I mean, this is very cool that you get an opportunity to meet him. He's going to be here all month long. FablesFrightNights.com or go to Santa's Village Azusman Park and for his Coffin Table book and so much more, go to TheMunsters.com. And, of course, you can get the entire series on DVD. It's on Netflix, and you can catch it also on Cozy TV.
And one more thing.
Yes, sir.
As they're listening, if they want to be part of the coolest fan group in the world, the official Munsters fan group is run by my missus.
All right, okay.
And we have more interaction and more fun with the fans and stuff. So if you like the Munsters and you like seeing some neat stuff, you got to check out the official Munsters fan group.
And where do you find that? Facebook?
On Facebook.
Facebook. Beautiful. All right, Butch Patrick, thanks, buddy, for being here.
Thank you, Dave.
Appreciate it. Happy Halloween to you.
Bye-bye.
All right, it's 720 WGN.